Welcome to Opening Stage VGH, the video game history podcast for everyone. I'm your host, Dean Beaver, and I'm once again joined by my lovely wife, Meredith.
Cheers!
We have a returning guest in the studio with us today, although studio might be a strong word.
Studios!
Yeah. Returning to the Opening Stage VGH auditorium is recurring correspondent on the show, Josh Zagorin. Josh, thank you so much for joining us today.
Oh, thank you for having me as always. Good to
Josh
see you.
Of Chad the Bird fame.
Yeah, I got him. He's sitting back here somewhere, but he's not his turn.
Nope. So, Josh, it's been a little while since you've been with us. Typically, when we have a guest on, we ask, like, what's your life story and your personal history of video games, but... we got a little bit of a limited amount of time today, so if you could just give us like a quick minute recap of Bubbles, let's start off there.
Pressure.
A minute recap of me, like what I'm up to these days. Chad the Bird is the majority of what I'm working on. We have a lot of internet stuff that we're doing. If you're not following, there's a link. Click it and come and experience all of this wild stuff. We got streams coming up. I do twice a month over at Logan Arcade. We play pinball. It's a lot of fun. And I've been working with a bunch of other producers and things to come up with some new content concepts that I think are going to be fun and a little bit outside the box. And if you're in Chicago, come check them out Saturdays. And then we're on tour. So keep an eye out because we're coming your way at some point.
Sweet. And I can't wait till you come to Nashville.
Awesome.
Working on it.
I meant to tell you, a fellow Sierra online fan, I mentioned this at the end of the last podcast episode that we published, but I actually ended up cutting it out. But I am officially a Sierra Online speedrunning world record holder.
That's right. You were telling me when what was the game that you did it for?
Leisure Suit Larry 3.
His mom and I are so proud.
Passionate Patty in pursuit of the pulsating pectorals.
That game, man.
So
that's a thing that happened in our world.
Yep.
Several times.
I'm a world record holder in a game where you have to type get wood.
I mean, good for you, man. Like most of us just kind of like let it happen, but if you can make it happen, that's a skill. Monetizable.
You know what they say, you know, be the change you want to see in the world.
Yeah, you know, so. be the
Jesus
example.
Christ.
Digital Wood is what the speed. That's your new podcast. It's just you diving into the world of Leisure Suit Larry. I want in on that. Just
okay.
FYI.
All right. When the sister podcast happens, first episode, you'll be there.
Yes. Because I remember not being allowed to play those games and absolutely playing them and being like, I don't get it.
Yep.
I feel like that's the way to like make kids want to do stuff is to not allow them to do stuff.
Yeah.
Tell them no.
So that being the case, again, Josh, thank you so much for being with us today. Let's go ahead and jump right into today's topic.
Please do, because I have no idea what we're talking about.
Like I've mentioned, the way the podcast works is I've got this book report written. I invite you to listen to the last podcast episode that we had about Shaq Fu, because...
I remember Shaq Fu. Oh my god. Okay, well, we're not talking about that. Okay.
No.
I feel like we should also mention that the last one that Josh was on was the Tim the Toolman Tim Taylor.
Tool Time game, yeah. I remember that.
But
it was pretty fun.
Oh, that game.
Not the game, the episode.
No, the game is unplayable.
Yeah, that episode sucks.
That episode was good. It's one of my favorite episodes.
All of that to say is during that episode, the Shaq Fu episode, we have a discussion where I tried to change it to an essay instead of a book report. And they were like, no, you got to change it back. And I was like, okay. So I got this book report I've written. Feel free to interrupt me. I'll answer all of your questions, play along with you as best I can. And we'll go from there. Sound good?
Sounds great.
Sounds good.
Oh, I'm so excited. All right. I hope I know this game. I hope I know it. All right, go ahead.
I know I don't know it.
I'm going to throw a few things out at you just to wet your palate. It's not about a single game.
It's a saga, a series. I shouldn't
be guessing. A plethora.
I shouldn't be guessing.
And we'll set that. And I'm going to give a little bit of a warning right at the top. We are going to get into some kind of technical stuff.
Okay.
About how certain video game systems run.
Okay.
Stick with me. It might sound a little confusing, but I've thought up like little stories to kind of little allegories or similes or something. I don't know what the real
word is. A metaphor
is
like a simile. Yeah.
Oh, we'll be so confused without stories and pictures.
Oh, shut up, Meredith.
If I shut up, half of your podcast
is weird.
Tanking.
All right. So all that to say is I'm going to go ahead and jump right in and we will go from there. Sound good?
Sounds great.
All right. The video game crash of 1983 had just occurred. Without going into too much detail, a combination of market saturation, lack of quality control, and the rise of the personal computer had all but killed the second generation of home video game consoles.
This also sounds like the housing crash in the 80s.
It's the same. It was the same thing. Exactly. Yeah,
yeah.
One could say.
The 80s were like, computers, no!
There was a lot of things that crashed in the 80s.
The lack of consumer confidence climaxed into Atari, once the industry leader, dumping millions of unsold cartridges into a landfill in Alamogordo, New Mexico.
Yep. I did see like one of those videos you made me watch on that. Mm-hmm. Also, apparently, did you know that there was Garfield phones washing up on this beach in France for decades?
For
like
decades.
Inexplicably. And yeah. They finally, again, another 80s thing. They finally found out that like there was like a carton, like one of those, what are they called? The container tank?
Like a shipping cargo.
Yeah.
A shipping cargo container. Shipping container? What the fuck is my problem?
I mean,
a shipping container knocked off a ship and like had sunk and it was full of and they found it. But I just love the fact that these French people were like, je ne sais pas, like,
it must be Monday.
They just clean up the Garfield phones off.
What is this in lasagna?
Who likes lasagna this much? This cat, he's so lazy. We love him.
He's like us in September. Anyway, you were saying, Dean.
The crash did not go unnoticed by Nintendo, who had just released the Famicom, or the... I feel like we probably say this anytime we mention the Famicom, but mm-hmm. for those of you who don't know, first-time listeners, the Famicom is the Japanese equivalent to the American Nintendo Entertainment System. It's the same thing.
Meant family computer, right? Like, that was the meaning behind Famicom.
I also just have to say, like, oh, it didn't go unnoticed by Nintendo, their biggest rival, though they were like cackling and rubbing their fingers together.
Also,
again, not trying to get too deep into it, but Nintendo was nowhere near the company that they would eventually become.
Right. Was Donkey Kong out at this point?
I think it was. If I recall,
this is 83.
I think it was
83.
I'll look it up.
I think Donkey Kong was 81 off the top of my head.
Yeah, 81. So that was arcade. Like they had like the home console was still just coming into it.
Yeah, time. July 9th, 1981, Donkey Kong came out.
I do like the idea that Jumpman was sitting on the top rafters being like, "Wait, what happened? Atari's going down? Well, hey, Big Monkey, we're going to be rich." And Donkey Kong was like, bah, bah,
"Atari's bah. Atari's listed as a developer on Donkey Kong."
No doubt.
Atari,
Nintendo, and Nintendo Research, and I mean, Sentient Software.
Interesting. I didn't know about the Sentient.
If I had
didn't know that Donkey Kong could think.
If I had to guess, I would say that those are probably developers of ports.
Okay. It went to the Famicom console in 1983, though.
Okay.
Interesting. Yeah. Feel like we're getting in the zone here.
Okay. Yeah.
I can definitely see Nintendo putting one of their biggest hits on their
console. Sure.
93% of users like this game.
But we're not going to talk about that today.
We're not talking about Donkey Kong? Boo.
No.
All right, go on.
In response to the video game crash of 1983, or what Nintendo called Atari Shock.
Oh, gosh.
Nintendo president Hiroshi...
Of course Nintendo would call it that. Like, let's just blame
dicks.
It on this guy.
Love it.
We're about to get into a fair amount of Nintendo's dickish moves.
Love it.
In response to what they called Atari Shock, Nintendo president Hiroshi Yamauchi implemented a strict set of licensing guidelines in order to hold more control over third-party developers. These guidelines included such policies as: 1. Any games developed had to adhere to Nintendo's strict content policies, which explicitly outlawed religious content as well as graphic depictions of sexuality and violence.
Which is why Sega, there was like two kids in the neighborhood when I was growing up. There were the Sega kids and there were the Nintendo kids. Sega kids,
those were everywhere.
That's what I understand from
good, good.
From
I'm
this
glad
show.
To know that you know, growing up in Clive, Iowa, I wasn't on the moon, even though it felt like, but like most of the, it was always like, oh, it's the Sega kids. You know, their parents let them have like airsoft paintball guns, and our parents are like, no,
and camo
guns.
Shorts and knives.
Yeah. Oh yeah, that you're not like camo. Everyone looked like Eddie Furlong in Terminator 2 would have been a Sega kid.
Do you think that the Sega kids were kids who were latchkey kids, like
we
whose
all,
parents?
I mean, we were all latchkey kids though.
That's true. It was back then. But like, do you think they were the parents that were like the executives and shit like that, who were like, or the really hard, like I'm working three jobs and like don't.
I don't.
Or
know if
or were
so
they the parents of like third children? And you're like, you're the third kid. I don't care.
Yeah, the first pancakes never turn out great. It's always the third, fourth ones that always look the best. Yeah. But no, it was that like, I don't know if you even know if it was a class thing. I think it was just like there are certain parents were just like kind of cool with like were really really into like military movies and guns and all that kind of, especially growing
that
up.
That makes sense.
And a lot of those kids were the ones that had the Segas. Like the Genesis kids, and the Super Nintendo kids were a little more like, I'm not allowed to have sugared cereal. And so, yeah.
I don't want to go off too far. I do think that there's a story to be told in the price of the Nintendo consoles versus the Genesis consoles. I'm not entirely sure if that's my story to tell, but I think that's definitely something that I want to explore later.
Were you a Sega kid or a Super Nintendo kid?
He was a Nintendo kid. Are you kidding me? But I will just say, I just, as a non-parent, I am fascinated by and having someone who has had parents, and now watching all of my friends and like my sister and everyone parent, it's just, I'm just fascinated by like, I just like to examine it. I'm not trying to judge anyone, but I am just like, because I've watched my sister be really strict with her first two, and the third one came around, and all of a sudden she's this like fun mom.
Right.
I'm like, okay, you just got tired is what happened.
You just let go.
And she will admit it. She was like, yeah, he's the third child.
Yeah.
Like, I'm done.
He'll be fine.
So going back to the story. No religious content, no graphic depictions of sexuality or violence. This didn't stop Capcom from creating a game which famously included a cutscene of the game's main antagonist's head exploding.
That's violent.
The antagonist in question was a clone of Adolf Hitler.
Oh, well, it's okay if it's Hitler.
Okay, go on.
If memory serves, that was Bionic Commando, and I believe they referred to the villain as Master D. Or something like that.
Because Bionic Commando, that's okay. Is that the one that was a dual? You had the zapper and the controller for that one?
No, that was the one where you couldn't jump because you had the grapple arm.
That was okay. Okay. So am I thinking of Master Blaster.
Can I get a grapple arm?
I think maybe. Well, Meredith, everything is better with a grapple arm.
I want a grapple arm. There's no reason to not. That's always an upgrade.
I mean, I have an Achilles injury. I cannot jump. I would like a grapple arm.
I remember Bionic Commando. I just, for some reason, I thought there was a blaster involved. Continue. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to interrupt. But yes, I like where this is going.
You're good.
Oh,
two.
Bionic Commando. Man, I haven't thought about that game in forever.
Two. Third-party developers were limited to releasing 5 titles per year.
Okay.
Famously, developer Konami circumvented this by creating another company in America called Ultra Games.
Ultra Games. Okay.
So, I don't know if you remember, but like, at least the Metal Gear games, what we
and
were
that
talking...
was Sony, though, I thought. Like, Metal Gear was like a Sony thing, right?
That's... Well, we'll get there, but there's Metal Gear, which
I'm
was on the
Nintendo.
Using my
grappling arm to shoot through this podcast at this
point. Right?
There's Metal Gear, which was on the Nintendo and the MSX and all of that. All
the
that
MSX!
Stuff. And then there was Metal Gear Solid, which started on the PlayStation. Which was Sony.
So okay, okay.
You're not wrong, but you're not right.
But I'm not right. Or am I so wrong?
Watch Dean be an asshole to his guests.
I'm just so wrong, it's right.
Yeah. Three. Each game published must be exclusive to the Famicom or Nintendo Entertainment System for a minimum of 2 years before being ported to any other system.
Okay.
And
I mean, none of this sounds totally unreasonable so far.
Yeah, well, they knew they had a thing, right? They were like, let's hold on.
But yeah.
Get ready. Four. Developers had to publish their software on cartridges produced and distributed by Nintendo with a minimum order of 10,000 cartridges to be purchased by the developer.
Okay. All right. So it's like, all right, we're going to invest in you, but you're going to get some skin in the game also.
Well, they learned from Atari's mistakes, right? Because Atari was just a bunch of like stoners that like they worked out of hot tubs. And we're just like, oh, we'll do whatever. And like, then it was like, okay, we're going to be adults. And this is a business now.
Yeah.
I mean, to be real, like, are they getting royalties off? Are they getting royalties off of these things? Or
I'm sure Nintendo, I'm not going to pretend to know all of the business that goes into it, but
I'm just going to say, like, when you get a book published, you get an advance. And that's off
Meredith, did you publish a book?
Not yet. It's coming.
Save it to the end of the episode.
But
we're on a time
like,
crunch here.
But no, I'm just saying this like makes sense because you get an advance, but if you don't sell up to your advance, you don't get any money afterwards.
Right,
so like, and you know, you get certain things. You get 10 author copies. You get like a certain number of arcs. But if you want more than that, that cuts into your budget. So it's like you have incentive to like get out there and market your shit. I mean, also you want people to read your book, you would hope. But like there's incentive to like, you know, so I can see that it's like, okay, this is how much you need to earn out. Now, what is different, it's almost like when you run a race for charity and they're like, all right, you have to earn $10,000. And then you like spam all your friends forever and you feel bad about it.
We're going to
never run a race for charity.
GoFundMe.
Again, because it's just too stressful, even if you make it. So it's almost like they're being like, all right, you have to agree that you're going to sell like this much. Otherwise, what happens, Dean?
You're out that money.
You have to pay. So like, say you sold 5,000 and not the 10,000, like, are you out half? Like, you have to pay for that? You have to buy it.
Yeah, you have to buy the cartridges from Nintendo in a minimum order of 10,000.
So Nintendo's not even producing this, really. You're producing it.
You're giving them the capital they need to produce it. It's kind of like they're coming up with the design and you're buying the hardware.
Yeah.
Or you're
assuming they're giving you some editing or something. And like, are they...
Well, if by editing you mean no graphic depictions of sexuality, violence, or religious content.
Yeah, as long as you stay in their parameters, which is like...
So your people are doing all the work, or are their people doing the work of producing?
The developer is doing all of the work, and Nintendo, who is publishing on their cartridges, is...
Activision designs the game, Nintendo produces the game. Right.
So all Nintendo's doing is like slapping a cover on it and throwing it out.
Well, they're also hardware. They're also putting it in. They also have to make it work in the thing. Like, so for instance,
and those those cartridges are so good.
They're so good. They're so classic. Good. I mean, I wish there was a way to do something with them for everything. Like everything was a Nintendo cartridge. Like if I needed to upload something, because I miss tactile hardware for computers. I miss having floppy disks and 3x5s and all that stuff.
Okay, I can get behind this a little bit then, because it, like, you know, Apple products, like if you got an iPhone, that's good. It's a good product.
Yeah.
It's good hardware. So if he was like, okay, we're going to put your shit in Apple I would be like, please take my book and run it through Apple, you know? Like, I don't care what it is. Like, it's going to sell. But Nintendo wasn't there yet. Right, Dean? So I'll let you continue with your story.
Arguably. I'm going to throw another fact in there to kind
of... Yay, more facts!
The cost of these cartridges varied from developer to developer based on negotiations and their relationship with Nintendo. Okay. However, based on my research, it looks like the average cost to developers was roughly $30 per cartridge.
Wow.
That was in.
Okay, that seems like a lot back in the 80s.
Well, let's Nintendo games were like $60. Like original Nintendo games, I feel like there was a price cap on that, because like every game I got when I was a kid, it was like $60 for that.
Well,
and that was a lot, wasn't it? I remember my parents being like, I'm so glad they're not into video games.
Yeah, it's a lot now. Like to get like a movie, like to rent a movie, to buy a movie for $60 is still like no.
I'm going to throw this out there. The Bureau of Labor Statistics has an inflation calculator, like the government website. So I put in $30 in 1985, which is when the NES started being circulated in America. So $30 per cartridge then would be about $82 today.
Oh, no, no, no.
Yeah. So
multiply
that by 10,000, which is the minimum or number of cartridges. You know
what, though?
You are
guaranteed, though, to get some people who believe in their shit and who work for their shit.
And you're guaranteed to get some cash to keep the thing going, because like operating costs had to be ridiculous. Especially
angel investors. That's what that's called.
Yep. Anyway, let's head on. To help enforce these licensing terms, Nintendo depended on a lockout chip called the 10NES.
Oh, I've heard of this on previous episodes.
The idea was simple. The 10NES chip in the console spoke to a specific chip in the cartridge, which, again, was made by Nintendo.
Right.
If the console chip detected the necessary chip at the cartridge, it was play as normal. However, if the 10NES was not able to detect the cartridge chip, it would restart the console roughly every second or so, rendering the inserted game unplayable. So, Josh,
they're following the Harley Davidson or Audi or model, where it's, what's the car that I'm thinking of that like you can only it only uses these parts. So it's like you can only fix.
I think that was like
Mercedes.
Yeah, Mercedes. Like you can only use a John Deere too. Yeah, you can only have like Harley Davidson only works with Harley Davidson parts.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I remember my dad had a Mercedes for a bit in the 80s. It was like, that's why he gave it up, because you had to get diesel all the time, and like, he could only go to certain
Jaguar,
gas stations.
I think Jaguar was another car.
My dad also had a Jaguar. Maybe I'm thinking of the Jaguar.
Was our dad the same dad?
We should introduce our dads. Did your dad like have that tape that went into the Jaguar? It was like, let us tell you about your Jaguar.
Oh yeah. Oh, it would tell you the day he got his Jaguar. Okay, listen. I'm not out here touting the fact that my dad had a Jaguar. I had a Jaguar. That
I didn't care either.
Jaguar, right? I don't have the Jaguar money.
I was the nerdiest kid in school. And when my dad dropped us off at our fifth grade graduation in the Jaguar, like people were like, kids that have never spoken to me before, like, Meredith, your dad owns a Jag? And I was just like, like, why are you talking to me?
Again, I don't own a Jag.
Saying.
As a side note, Atari did at one point, Atari went through this phase of creating consoles that they would name after cats.
I know where this is going.
Definitely the Atari Lynx.
Was there not an Atari Jaguar?
There was an Atari Jaguar, and it sucked.
I remember when that came out, and we were like, oh, maybe we should check it out, because it looked cool. And
it had that Alien versus Predator game.
Yeah, that was the game that was like, this is what we always saw on the front. Like at the time, it wasn't GameStop; it was Babbage's. The name of the store by me was Babbage's.
I remember that store, but I had nothing to do with games. I think it must have just been in the mall or something.
Yeah, it was always in the mall for us. Okay. Babbage's was the corner. It was the cool kids' corner. It was a Babbage's, and it was like in the back of the mall, under the stairs. There was a Babbage's and a Spencer Gifts. And Hot Topic. And I mean, like,
Spencer Gifts.
Yeah, like, this was, like, pre-Hot Topic was, like, kind of kitschy. This is, like, when Hot Topic was really actually for goths. So it was, like, you went to buy games, you went to buy, you know, nose rings and, like, you know, like, chain wallets and then boob mugs. And it was just boom, boom, boom. That's where that little corner back there with all the crazy stuff. Like, you know, if you needed a Blacklight poster, if you needed a leather skull wallet, and if you wanted to see, like,
what I remember that
That and weird, they always had these
that weird thing these, that like, they TVs. Fought with in that Star Trek episode. You could buy that.
Yeah, they had they had they in front of Babbage's. They always had a television, and on the television they were playing like demos of whatever the newest games that had come out. And I remember when the Atari Jaguar came out, and it was Alien vs. Predator, and I feel like Splatterhouse was in there somewhere. And I don't remember what
that was. TurboGrafx-16.
That I'm thinking, okay, so that's TurboGrafx-16. Okay. But I do remember when the Atari Jaguar came out, because I remember that was like, is it better than the Nintendo? We were like, no, it's not.
Well, I feel like at one point we're probably going to do an episode on the Atari Jaguar. But...
Oh, I want in. I remember when that thing
you
dropped.
Have to say Jaguar.
Jaguar.
That's what okay, they said on the so, that's anyway, what they said on the tape. Sorry.
Anyway, all bringing it back to the story, Josh, I don't know the last time that you actually tried to play like a legitimate Nintendo Entertainment System, but chances are you put in the cartridge, you pushed it down, lowered the little flap on the front, you press the play button, and the red light flashed and you got like a split second of the first level of Super Mario.
Yeah.
What's going on is the lockout chip is not recognizing the cartridge chip.
Oh, it's not recognizing.
Yes, because all of those contacts for between the cartridge and the console are really dirty because that game is 40 years old.
Yeah. So we have an original Nintendo in good working order. We've been crushing Bubble Bobble lately.
Noise.
And yeah, it was such a cool thing when Lara got her, when we moved in together, because I had my like old Rubbermaid full of like Nintendo cartridges. Some of them had like were broken, peeling.
I'm just curious here. Like your Rubbermaid is, what, 8x10, 10x10, 10x12?
My
feet,
Rubbermaid?
Inches?
My
yeah.
Mm-hmm. It was, I don't know. That one was about the size of like, oh, I don't know, was like an old printer. So like maybe like this big.
Yeah, the same deep.
Yeah, yeah. It was one of those classic.
So 6x6x6, 3x3x3.
Math is in. Correct.
I'm gonna keep going.
I just want to know how many cartridges we have here. That's all I'm wondering.
Moving over. These licensing policies allowed Nintendo a great deal of quality control over the games published for the Famicom and Nintendo Entertainment System, not to mention the ability to make a great deal of money off the sale of games.
Right.
This did not come without Nintendo making some enemies in the process.
Some
games, despite months of work, might not turn a profit for the developer. Atari, frustrated with this lockout chip, at one point lied to the United States Copyright Office in order to get the design and reverse engineer the cartridge chip.
Did they literally have a dude come in and be like, I work for Nintendo.
Not quite.
Nintendo.
This is another thing that I could probably do like an entire episode about, but basically there's some law, or there was some law where like you could go into a patent office and you could get a copy of a patent from a rival company if you were embroiled in a lawsuit with them for like copyright infringement. So they weren't quite there yet, but like the person that was there was like, yeah, we're suing Nintendo. Can I get that blueprint? And they were like, sure.
Yeah, okay, why not? Sure.
And they were just tired, so they said yes.
This resulted in a massive lawsuit between Atari and Nintendo in 1992.
So, you know, they weren't really lying.
Right.
But
it did end up being a lawsuit.
But that's a story for another time. Color Dreams was an American video game developer founded in 1988. The company's founder...
Right at the end of the housing crash.
Yeah. The company's founder, Daniel Lawton, was a self-taught programmer and avid opponent of Nintendo's strict licensing policies.
All right.
The company managed to find a way to circumvent the 10 NES chip and soon became the largest developer of unlicensed video games for the Nintendo Entertainment System.
Oh, I feel like I know where this is going, and it's making me very happy. Continue, please.
Okay. Color Dreams' lockout circumvention worked basically like this. Instead of devising a chip that the 10 NES would recognize, stun it! The chip in Color Dreams cartridges would await the electric signal from the 10NES and respond with a large shock, temporarily rendering the 10NES useless.
Whoa, ninja shit.
With the lockout chip stunned, Color Dreams games were free to be played without interruption.
Oh my God, that's clever.
Okay. So Josh, imagine you're waiting to get into this club, and this club is popping off, and you've got your giant gym bro dude Brandon with you.
Okay. Who's
and this...
I'm just thinking about Brandon right now.
Right, and, me too. I'm like
I'm
trying
about
to
what is he wearing?
Yeah.
And this
he's
club
got a tool jersey on.
And why is he with Josh, our friend?
I know Brandon and I are cool.
Yeah. Brandon's pretty cool. So there's a bouncer in front of this club.
Okay.
And so you come up and he asks for your ID and you give it to him. And then the bouncer recognizes Brandon and was like, hey, this guy's caused some trouble in the past. I can't let him in. So Brandon just fucking cold cocks him. Like, and the bouncer just goes flying, fucking ragdolls.
Well, and then you guys get in, but also so does everyone.
Whoa. You go into the club, Brandon.
And also so does everyone else, though.
Yeah. About 8 seconds later, after getting punched to oblivion, the bouncer gets up, goes back to his stool, and looks in the club and says, hey, that guy's in there. Well, he got past me. He must be okay.
Oh.
That's interesting.
What a
workaround.
That's how the circumvention basically worked.
That's so interesting.
Wow.
And smart. And cut.
For real.
Color Dreams was very proud of their innovation and even boasted about their inability to be sued in their advertising.
That'll end well.
I'm going to read this. And it's the last sentence that is the most insane to me. Or let me ask you this. Josh, do you have a really good salesman voice?
Yeah, I do.
Okay.
On occasion.
All right.
So an actor will know. An actor
yeah,
will know.
Yeah, no, I can do that.
Give me talk amongst yourselves for like 5 minutes. Yeah,
wait, Dean, is this what you want me to read?
Yeah, this is what I want you to read.
Okay, right, in ready. A salesman voice?
Like super salesman voice.
Okay. Color Dreams is the leader in non-infringing Nintendo-compatible game cartridges. Color Dreams has taken preventative measures against patent infringement from the start. Our game cartridges are designed with the help of a legal team consisting of its own counsel, what? As well as outside patent counsel to ensure that the games are infringement-free. From the cartridge case design to our lockout chip, you can see it is the goal of Color Dreams to engineer around rather than challenge patented technology. Engineer around. I like that.
Okay, get ready.
The fact that Nintendo has not sued Color Dreams is perhaps your best assurance that our games are infringement free.
Ladies and gentlemen, that is a cold read from a professional.
Oh my God, I love that they said the fact that we haven't been sued, you can guarantee.
Like that's in their press release.
Doing. Yeah. That's
in their press release. We haven't been sued, so you know it's the 80s, folks. Everyone's getting fucking sued. Everyone's doing cocaine and everyone's getting sued.
That's like me coming up to you. That's like me coming up to you at a party and being like, "Hi, I'm Dean Beaver. I have not been sued. I have not been convicted of murder."
Here's the deal.
No, it's like
I am going to introduce myself as my name is Josh and I have not been sued.
It's like those dudes who like date you and are like, look, I don't beat you. I don't yell at you. Like, I'm a good boyfriend.
Yeah, that's a solid. That's not a red. That flag is so red. That is the reddest flag I've ever heard. When someone's like, no, I'm one of those nice guys. And you're like,
right.
Oh, okay.
Right.
Okay. Good to know that you had to remind me.
So there's that.
PSA, ladies, if you are experiencing this, there are hotlines you can call and I'm dead fucking serious.
I'm going to put those in the show notes.
Incidentally, if you are a video game developer and someone comes up to you and says, I have not been sued, there are numbers you can call, and those will also be down in the description of this episode.
That too.
Or Ben, like I said, ladies, but like anyone whose people are saying things like that to you, there are heartlines.
Yeah, just in general. Don't trust anyone who says they're a nice person.
Yeah, anyone who has to like defend their baseline against you by saying they're not beating you, not getting sued, not like, no, like, no, they shouldn't have to convince you that they're nice.
Just
so
be good.
Yeah.
Hotlines will be in the show notes. Go on, Dean.
There we go. All of this did not go without attracting Nintendo's attention. Color Dreams were correct in that they hadn't broken any laws, so legal action was out of the question.
Oh, God.
Nintendo could, however, threaten retailers who were selling their unlicensed games.
Okay.
Nintendo threatened to pull their licensed game from store shelves if the retailer in question was found to be carrying unlicensed products. By 1989, video games had rebounded from the crash in a big way, and retailers easily relented, refusing to carry Color Dreams games.
Ooh.
So, wow. they were like, hey, you like Contra? Contra's a great game, right? You're not going to sell Contra if you're selling Color Dreams.
So it was games. Like a mob thing.
It's
yeah, but like with legitimate cause, though. Right, like these guys were like, no, these guys are scams, man.
Yes and no. I mean, again, this is a new technology at the time.
That's true. Yeah, this is the '80s. It just started.
This would be like Apple doing what they needed to at the same time, which they probably were at the time. But
it's like Bitcoin. If Bitcoin really went somewhere,
yeah.
oh, Bitcoin. Okay, guys.
That's another red flag if he talks about crypto.
Okay.
As a side note, a buddy of mine up in Chicago, friend of the podcast, Joseph Ramsky, he has a candle company that he runs with his wife, and they have a scent that they call getting into crypto.
Oh my God. That's right. What are their candles called again? Like,
I think it's, I'm going to need to double. I think it's, like I'll look it up. Or Plan B's candles. Or something.
It's awesome. Something funny.
Yeah. Anyway, let's keep moving on. Color Dreams had hit a wall. Without major retailers, their games weren't moving, and customers had to call Color Dreams directly to order their products.
Uh-huh.
Also, Nintendo had wised up and begun revisions to the 10NES that resisted Color Dreams' voltage spikes.
Okay.
Color Dreams responded with newer copies of their games that delivered larger voltage spikes.
Jesus Christ.
But they could only take this strategy so far. Too large a shock could damage the console and render it useless. Mm-hmm. A longtime employee of Color Dreams recalled having customers read their NES's serial numbers in order to determine what product to send them.
Interesting. Okay.
Yeah.
Huh.
Because they would be like, I have the like 001 model. And they
right,
would
because
be like,
there weren't a lot of newer consoles coming out. It was just like they were just making them. Like, you know, it wasn't like there weren't a lot of upgraded consoles yet.
Yeah, like nowadays, if a video game, for instance, undergoes like a patch or anything like that, like Nintendo or Capcom or whoever's putting out those patch will provide you with like patch notes and stuff like that. But back then, that wasn't something that you regularly had to publish.
Right. Well, because it wasn't happening as much.
And that
culture,
too. Yeah.
And the culture wasn't there yet.
Well, the computers weren't there yet.
True.
As 1989 drew to a close, their future was uncertain. Then someone had an idea.
And that man was Walt Disney.
You know what doesn't sell a lot of Nintendo products? Christian bookstores.
Is that where this is going? Okay, go on. I'm going to shut up.
Color Dreams changed their name to Wisdom Tree.
Wisdom Tree!
And began its life as the Nintendo Entertainment System's foremost developer of Christian-themed video games.
Bible Man, we're getting into it. No!
Okay.
What? Oh my God.
Like, so I used to be a DJ in college, and like, we knew a lot about the artists that came in, and like, every now and then you'd see an artist try and fail and then like reinvent themselves and come back. And very frequently it was like, try, fail, come back as a Christian artist.
Yep. Oh yeah. That still happens.
And I'm not trying to knock anyone's religion.
Yep.
But
But
I'm just going to leave that there.
Are we getting into like, okay.
Fun fact, you know who began as a Christian recording artist?
Creed.
Katy Perry.
Yeah, I did know that.
That's cool. Yep. Interesting.
And then she like couldn't, also Taylor Tomlinson.
Yep, she began as a Christian stand-up.
She started in churches when she was a kid.
Christian stand-up is like, an oxymoron, you know that, right?
Well, they booked her in churches, and then she did one joke like on Twitter, and the joke was, "I'm like a wild animal in bed, more afraid of you than you are of me."
That's a good joke.
It is, right? But the place that booked her was like, "We can't have you in our church if you're going to make jokes like this. So you need to take that down." And she kind of realized, like, "Wait, no, I need to not be." Yeah. Doing churches anymore because like this is the
joke.
Yeah,
comedy, this is like who I am, and I can't be doing it in good faith if I'm not who I am. But yeah, that's why she's so young doing what she does at such a high level, because she started when she was a kid in churches
and had to limit herself.
Are we getting into Bible adventures? Is that where this is going? I'm so excited.
hush, like, you know that Bjork song.
Wisdom Tree took off.
I will concede that that is a good name.
It's a good name.
While Wisdom Tree's games might not have been the highest quality, there was little competition in the Christian video game market.
Oh, yeah.
In addition to developing new titles, they began rebranding previous titles with Christian theming. Notable examples include Bible Adventures.
Yes! Oh, I knew it was coming. Oh my god, the amount of times we've had a copy of Bible Adventures.
What the shit?
Just because we thought that was hilarious. We were like, we have to know. Oh my god, this is bringing back an insane amount of memories. That was like what, 91? Somewhere 91. In there?
I've got them years.
Yes. Okay, I'm sorry. Because I was 11 when that happened. All right, keep going.
Bible Adventures, 1991. A cartridge holding three different games, all obviously based off of Super Mario Bros. 2. This game recounts the tales of Noah collecting animals for the Ark, Moses' mother saving him from the Pharaoh's men to send him down the Nile River, and the confrontation between David and Goliath.
Goliath, that was the one I remember the most. Because it was fun. That one was fun. I'll say it.
Well, there's a few things that I want to throw out, mainly because I watched the Angry Video Games Nerds Bible Games video recently in preparation for this video. But there's a few things. When you're playing the Noah Collecting the Animals games, you hold all of the animals above your head.
Yep.
Like, wait. Noah. At a time or yeah. Together?
Like, you can...
Because I've seen you try to hold both of our cats above your head.
Yeah, I know. But, like, that... And that's the freaky thing about this game is, like, apparently Noah's fucking jacked.
Yeah.
Because he can hold, like, two cows, a horse.
So he literally goes out and collects the animals.
Yeah, it's like... Yes, and, like, it's just and, like, the same vibe.
Throws them into the ark.
So he, like fucking cleans them.
Yeah. Yes. Also... Okay. When you're playing the Moses,
even the elephants.
Oh my god!
Well, the thing is, it gives you like a checklist of all of the animals in the area. That
are there crocodiles? Are there cobras?
There are snakes, and the weird thing is that those snakes are different from the snakes that you're supposed to avoid.
Oh,
so you're like, I want to grab these snakes. Yeah, I want to grab these snakes because they're on my list.
So he, like, saved the wrong snakes in America, at least. Okay, Josh just sent me a picture of this, and this is completely unrealistic.
It's primo quality.
Like, he's holding two oxen. He's holding an oxen pony sandwich is what he's holding. There's two oxen on either side, and there's a pony, two ponies in the middle, and also, like, a random cow. Yeah. There's a threesome happening here with the cows.
Delicious.
So but he is a strong man. So okay, I gotta say, there's some magic happening here. I always say, as a writer, you gotta establish the rules of your world early on, and you cannot carry five beasts of burden above your head.
Well, you'll be happy to know that they did think about this to an extent. If you're
I'm so glad.
If you're carrying any of the oxen, you cannot jump.
Oh, well, you might spill them.
Yeah.
Don't soil the meats.
I mean, it'd be ground beef then.
Also,
I just sent you a picture of David and Goliath because that's the one that I remember the most.
Okay, I'm looking at that.
Well,
it's just Super Mario 2 is really all it is.
Well, the funny thing about the Moses game is that you're playing as Moses' mother, and you can
wait. You're playing as Moses' mother?
Yeah, you have to get him to the Nile so that Pharaoh's men don't get him because he's goddamn Moses.
Is Mama rich?
The thing is that since you're playing as Moses' mother and you jump over a number of waterways, you can just chuck Moses into the river.
Oh, yeah.
Wait.
Launch him.
Does he die?
Yeah. You lose.
You get to the end of the level and it's like, you won, but you forgot baby Moses.
Oh, wait. Okay. So hang on. So it's Moses' mother when he's a baby, not when he's an adult trying to save everyone. Okay. That's where I was because I just looked at the oxen. So I was like, wait, Moses' mother is now here? She's like a granny and she's chucking people. Anyway, so I'm looking at this David and Goliath thing you sent me. Mm-hmm. And all I see is this dude in a wrestling singlet running through the forest.
That's the whole game.
David or Goliath? That's David.
Because Goliath was a boss fight, if I remember.
Why is he in a wrestling singlet?
What else are you going to run?
Because he's the man. Because he's fucking Jack.
Check out that package.
Because he works out. Because he takes... He looks like a little baby
in a onesie.
Yeah. Because he moisturizes, keeps it smooth. That's what he's doing.
All right. I'm going to cut this off because we have at least four more games to go through.
Oh, dear.
Please continue.
King of Kings, the early years.
Yes.
Also 1991.
Woo.
Using the same game engine as Bible Adventures, this game retells three more tales from Scripture, this time focusing on Jesus's formative years. The game focuses on the three wise men's trip to Jerusalem to give their gifts.
Along the way, they fight various, aliens and small turtle creatures.
Jesus' flight to Egypt for safety from King Herod.
Which was like an F-Zero game.
And Joseph searching for 12-year-old Jesus as the latter travels to Jerusalem. GameSpy featured this game on their list of, quote, seven Christmas games that make you hate Christmas, end quote.
Wow.
I'm not always 100% on board with GameSpy, but knocked it out of the park on that.
That's a pretty solid list right there. Good God. I have to find that list. I want to read them all.
King James Bible.
Oh, wow.
1993. The King James Bible, now available on the Nintendo Game Boy.
Oh, yeah, the whole Bible?
Whole Bible.
Bible it.
Here's the thing. You got a road trip, at least you're reading. Because that's what we wanted to do with our Game Boy was homework.
Yeah. Let's be real. Like, for some households, some kids, it'd be like, it's called King James Bible. Like, and the parents would be like, well, go ahead.
Yes, you need to buy a Game Boy then so you can play that game. Sweet. Because it came with Tetris.
It is this, like, weird... super proto e-reader.
Yeah, that I can only imagine how impossible that thing was to actually read.
I'm not gonna start because you would start off with the original Game Boy, which does not have a backlight or anything like that, so you can only do this during the day, or you got to turn on the backlight in your family van and your dad's gonna yell at you.
Especially at night.
Yeah.
Because a lot of you kids, you don't know, man, like with your smartphones, you can play games at all hours of the day. We had to you either had to buy the attachment with the magnifying glass and the light, which was just clunky and horribly inconvenient, or you just had to wait until the sun came up if you wanted to play the Game Boy.
Do you remember Napster?
Oh, I remember Napster.
Mm-hmm. Like I used to have to wait because I was on a landline with my roommate. I used to have to wait till everyone went to bed and I would download shit while I was sleeping.
Sure. Yeah, that's how we would either download porn or
This does feature a Hangman-esque minigame and a word-finding feature. Again, very akin to early ebook features.
So are they, like, hanging, like...
No, there are three sheep in a fence.
What? They're hanging sheep?
No.
Okay.
If you guess...
Oh, in a fence, not in offense. Okay. But,
yeah, behind a, like, physical fence, barrier fence. And
I was like, what does a fucking sheep
do? The wrong letter, then a sheep jumps the fence. And if you guess three wrong letters, then all of the sheep get away. Because Jesus is the ultimate shepherd.
Right. Oh.
And you failed Jesus.
Dear God. No pun intended.
So it features a Hangman-esque minigame and a word-finding feature, and it goes for an obscene amount on eBay.
Oh, I'm sure.
How much? How much? How much?
Like a few thousand.
Whoa!
Like more than three?
That's wild.
Yeah, like complete in box.
What's it called?
King James Bible. Game Boy. Look it up.
King James Bible. Game Boy. All right, that's I'm gonna go crazy. Shopping.
Yeah, all right, shopping.
I'm not seeing thousands. I am seeing ridiculous, like, hundreds. Oh, that's an actual King James Bible. Okay. The actual King James Bible, if anyone's wondering, is 16,000.
Right. Find one on eBay for $750. I can't.
Okay.
Those of you listening at home, if you were nervous that you weren't going to be able to get a vintage retro play King James Bible,
yeah,
it's $750 right now.
Admittedly, recently I've been a little eBay happy, and I did order the entire line of Burger King Xbox games. But that was for $10, so I feel pretty like.
What a reference.
You can spend $10 at Burger King. So
all of it was worth it for Sneak King. Anyway.
I'm looking at some gameplay of the King James Bible, gameplay in quotation marks, and it's infuriating already.
Yeah. Oh. Anyway. Sunday Fun Day.
Oh, I remember Sunday Fun Day.
1995. A rebranding of Color Dreams' Menace Beach, which had the player save his girlfriend Bunny from the villainous Demon Dan.
Ah, Demon Dan!
In this new game, you play as an unnamed hero who must travel by skateboard and battle against various enemies, all of which who are trying to stop you from getting to Sunday school.
What the fuck?
So
who cares? Like, why are they trying to stop you?
So, well,
motivation. Like, what the fuck? Are they pedophiles?
It's like, hey, kid. Well, no,
this is one of those rebranding
games. They're trying to stop
games.
You from getting to Sunday school.
Yeah, because they don't want you to do that.
Why? Well, why don't they want you to do that? You cannot have a good villain without motivation.
Good motivation wasn't necessarily their prerogative.
I'm not going to say that any of these games had like a deep plot.
No, not at all.
Except and again, Bible Adventures.
This is a rebranding of a game that they had previously made.
Yeah. It was like a skin.
The whole thing about the previous game is
that I'm going to listen to you and then I have things to say.
Please do. The whole thing about the previous game is that you're trying to save your girlfriend. And on top of that, the whole thing is that in between each stage, it shows your girlfriend like chained up and she's like, I've been here so long that my clothes are beginning to rot.
Oh, my God.
And so like you play through the game and this cutscene between each stage, your girlfriend, her clothes start disappearing.
You got to get it before the clothes come off.
Exactly.
So you're like saving her innocence, but you're also a little turned on.
Exactly.
Is that not most modern religions, though?
Jesus Christ.
Well, literally.
Well, that, again, what were the plot that we're talking about?
Oh, the 80s. I forgot what an interesting time the 80s were because I was a child.
The plot that we're talking about here is for Menace Beach, not Sunday Funday.
Right. No,
Sunday Funday, you're trying to get to Sunday school instead of saving your girlfriend. So the scenes
How
of your
old
girlfriend,
are you?
Me?
No, the person in Sunday Funday. I know how old you are. I'm fucking married to you.
I'm going to gloss over this
question. Doing our
question.
Taxes.
You're old enough.
Old this... enough for what? Like, it's Sunday. You're going to Sunday school. Like, what are you old enough? That could be 6 to 12.
You're old enough to skateboard.
Yeah.
All right. You
know, successfully in those boy shorts. I sent you all a picture from Sunday Funday. It is a delight.
That's a strong word.
That kid could be literally 6 to 12.
Yeah, well, that's what the game was geared toward.
So go ahead.
They replaced the gradually degrading clothing of your girlfriend with this old, like, Sunday school teacher who's like, it's so good that you're making such an effort to get to Sunday school to learn about Jesus.
Fuck, dude.
You know, every kid's hero, their Sunday school nanny.
The game also features a sing-along of The Ride from Christian band For Him.
Was that a, like, big deal at the time?
I don't know.
Exactly. I don't know. And I guarantee you none of those kids did either. And they were just sitting there going, oh, okay.
This has the distinction of being the last commercially released game for the Nintendo Entertainment System.
Really? Sunday Funday was the last commercially released game for the Nintendo. Wow.
I use the term commercially released very loosely.
Loosely, sure.
Because it was unlicensed. There's red flag number one. And two, homebrew games have been in development since then. I'm not going to get too deep into that. So that's why I called it commercially released.
That's fair.
So is this...
We're about to get wilder.
Oh, okay. Is this the last one that they're still doing their, like, 10,000 like thing and 10,000 you have to buy 10,000 cartridges and all that?
Oh, stuff. Yeah. Well, that was their...
No.
Oh, no? Okay.
Well, Color Dreams, again, they were like, fuck you, Nintendo.
Oh, this is Color Dreams.
Color Dreams slash Wisdom Tree.
Wisdom
Tree. I'm just... There's so many things happening here.
Oh, it's such a journey. I'm having such a great time.
Like...
I'm trying to wrap it up as questions.
It's impossible.
I'm sorry. Okay. Go ahead. I have questions, but go ahead.
All right. Last notable game that we're going to talk about and then talk about later. Super 3D Noah's Ark.
Oh, dear God.
Using
Super
3D
Noah's Ark.
Just as a side note, I didn't realize how many God and Jesus like curses I did on a regular basis until this episode. Continue.
Using the engine from id Software's Wolfenstein 3D.
Dear God, what?
What? He's making himself laugh.
The player controls Noah as he makes his way through the Ark, feeding sleep-inducing food to irate animals by means of slingshot.
Drugging your animals.
We'll talk more about this game later, but the game holds the distinction of being the only unlicensed game for the Super Nintendo and requires a second licensed game to be plugged in to the top to bypass the system's lockout technology.
I remember these things. Yeah.
Similar to the Game Genie or Sega's Sonic and Knuckles.
Right. I remember there was a kid that I knew who's Mormon had one. And I was like, is that a Game Genie? And he was like, no. And I kept thinking it was like a parental control thing.
No, oh, not quite.
No. Well, I mean, a little bit.
Rumors have been circulating that id Software licensed the Wolfenstein engine at a rock bottom price to Wisdom Tree because they too were fed up with Nintendo's licensing policies.
I mean, make your money. I wouldn't be surprised. I mean, if they were like, hey, okay, there's something coming. Very excited.
This is untrue, however.
Ah, boo!
Id Software had since moved on to their vastly superior Doom engine and were merely licensing a less powerful product.
Can I just say Doom engine? This is like a speak that they converse in corporately.
I don't want to spoil anything, but we at one point will do an episode about Doom and Id Software.
I want in. I have so much to say about id, but anyway.
Id Software had since moved on to their vastly superior Doom engine and was merely licensing a less powerful product to Wisdom Tree. id Software has gone on to state that they have never had issues with Nintendo's policies.
Okay, you can say that. You may say what you will, id.
As sales,
you want to have friends with the big peoples.
But you and I both know.
You got to do business somehow.
Mm-hmm.
As sales started to wane in the mid to late 90s, it appears that Wisdom Tree made some attempts to break into the horror video game market.
Well, I mean, we can thank Christianity for most of what we think of as the modern haunted house. That doesn't surprise me. Plus, Blumhouse, man. Yeah. Blumhouse is, you know, they work in faith-based entertainment. Like, they're all connected. And I will never miss a Blumhouse movie, so.
You know, not all faith-based entertainment is bad.
You're right. That I agree with.
It's just when it's hypocritical that it sucks.
Records show an attempt at creating a game called Maggots.
Okay, that's a game I would never ever play.
In which the player would play as a character trapped inside of a human corpse.
Why the fuck would you do this?
Who must escape while avoiding maggots trying to infest it.
This sounds fucking horrible. This is like,
to me.
Do you remember the Inner Space movie from the 80s? Oh, yeah. This is like Inner Space, but like horror.
Oh, I love it. I love it. This is an amazing idea. It never happened?
Now that I've said that, I realize I just gave it the perfect comps.
Sounds amazing.
Like Inner Space, but horror with maggots.
Obviously, this game would clash with Wisdom Tree's family-friendly image.
I mean, fucking obviously, yes.
So the product was shelved.
Boo. Do they have any concept art? Like, does that even exist? Or is it just like the...
Josh, I think it's up to you to make it. I think you can just make it.
Go on, Dean. Dean, go on.
Similarly, Super 3D Noah's Ark had begun development as a game based off of the Hellraiser franchise.
Hot!
In which Daniel Lawton was a fan.
Oh my god. That's amazing. It was a 3D Hellraiser game?
We'll get there. Meredith is gone. I need that.
I had to cat wrangle.
Oh my god! I want
the cats.
This.
The cats had to switch rooms.
I want this. I'm googling it while you're talking to me.
Initial attempts to put the 3D game on the NES, which I'm going to pause there before we move on because that's fucking crazy. Initial attempts to put the 3D game on the NES were met with extremely limited success. However, id Software, who provided the game's 3D engine, had just released the critically acclaimed Doom, and Wisdom Tree felt their Hellraiser game couldn't compete.
Okay.
The game was moved to the Super Nintendo and changed to put Noah on the Ark, putting animals to sleep instead of the Hellraiser shooting demons.
Wow. Oh my god. I'm sending you something. You're gonna love this. But please don't let me stop you.
Wisdom Tree continued to produce games for various systems, their last being 2007's Jesus in Space for the PC.
That exists? That's
yes!
real? I want it.
I looked into it!
Oh my god.
So what would that be like? Sci-fi religion?
I think that's being generous. I looked into it. And there's definitely a character named Gil Feltefish.
Oh my god, you're fucking kidding me.
I died inside just a little bit when you said that.
I think it's a game about going to different planets and converting their planets to Christianity.
Of course it is.
I feel like the 23andMe DNA part that says I'm part Ashkenazi Jew, like, just kind of, like, revolted and threw up inside.
No. Speaking as a full Jew, I'm like, go on.
I included it in here because I was like, it's Jesus in space. That's funny.
Jesus in space. Like, let's go.
Because here are the different planets you could go to. The first one's Planet Vet. That was where you met Gil Filtafish.
Oh, Jesus
and
Christ.
Then there was Planet Whammo, where you could meet a bunch of Jewish robots, which is badass. And then Ice Moon Alpha, where you meet the teacher Snobob, and they do a play about Okay, I'm going to read you this description. Ice Moon Alpha, Stu and Paul, who I'm assuming are the characters that you play in this game, venture to a planet inhabited by snowball men, otherwise known as snowmen, but we're going to call them Snowball Men.
So they look like snowmen. Okay.
I guess Teacher Snowbob, which is
they were afraid of like copyright.
Okay. They ultimately put on a play about Jesus coming to Emmaus and discuss how to see Jesus. That was like the goal of that one. Oh my God! On Planet Whammo, you have to make a Seder meal and explain the Last Supper. Planet Vet is an underwater
civilization. The Seders?
Kill filter fish. Yeah, I mean that's true.
Oh okay, so okay.
Oh my! At least it's Jewish people involved.
That Dean, how much do you have left? Because I have some.
Not a whole lot.
I have some things to say.
I, on the other hand, am finding some pictures that I'm going to send you guys. It's just going to be happiness.
So they're
I'm also just feeding cheese to the cats so that they'll be quiet.
Their last original game was 2007's Jesus in Space for the PC.
Oh my God! No way.
They. All right, get ready. Continue to operate today, though they more or less only license their catalog of games to other companies, which is ironic once you think about it.
Yeah.
Nintendo never did pursue legal action against Wisdom Tree, with the most probable reason being feared backlash for litigating against a Christian-facing company.
Yeah, makes sense.
While Nintendo's licensing practices have relaxed over time, having a similar set of policies in place has become the industry standard. Super 3D Noah's Ark is currently available on Steam for a suggested retail price of
$7.99. Boo! Boo!
So that is the story of Color Dreams and Wisdom Tree.
Oh my God. What like a treat. I didn't expect this to go this way. Oh my God, what a party this has been.
Back in the 80s.
Delicious.
So I didn't do video games in the 80s.
Clearly.
Hey, you say that like that. And
whatever,
yet,
you
that
shit
is
on
the
me all the time.
Zing! That is the entire reason I'm on this podcast. So I know that things were different in the 80s. I was there. I was not as conscious about the world and things, but I was there. Story... was it not the same, like, or was it one of those things where you just didn't care if someone was big enough? I'm like thinking here about the protagonist and the antagonist. It's like, why did he want to stop him from going to Sunday school? It's like no, really, why did he want to stop him from going to Sunday school? Like, what was the villain's goal? I want to know. Because like, if you have a dumb villain or a villain without cause, that doesn't work for your story. Like, so I'm readers. I'm sorry.
I'm just gonna put it out there. I feel like your concerns are valid. I just don't think they cared. Yeah, is what I'm getting out of that.
That's what I was gonna
do
say.
Do you think that they were just like making money regardless? And
well, Christianity is a big business.
Can we liken that to like a movie or a book of the now?
I mean, I feel like.
Well, I don't feel like Christian entertainment has changed all that much since the 90s.
Do you think there are, like, I don't know. I don't know anything about Christian. Like, so literally, if you are Christian entertainment, can you just literally, like, be like, hey, these people are trying to stop you from believing in God, and that's your villain?
Yeah, that's kind of it. There's a lot of that. I work on a show called The Chosen, which is a really popular Christian-based, faith-based show. And the reason I think this one is going as well as it's going is that it's an actual creative team that like sat down and wrote some decent stories based on the Gospels, and it presents that same story.
Because let's be real, there's some really good stories in the Bible.
Oh, some may say it's the greatest story ever told.
Regardless of what you believe, there's some good shit in there.
Good. Yeah, the way that they are telling the story is the human effort to understand the miracles that they're witnessing, which I think is an interesting way of telling it, because they're like not focused on like, because a lot of it is you know, it's like going on your favorite ride over and over. You know where this is going to go,
right?
And it's just like you go through the thing and then the thing, and then
we've all been on Space Mountain.
Exactly. And then you do the, oh, this is my favorite partner, and then it goes, which has been a lot. It holds the material super precious. But what they're doing with this show is that they're telling it from the point of view of the different apostles, which I think is really interesting.
Oh, that is interesting.
And the show is very interesting. But there are moments within it that you just kind of go, well, you get this because you are into this. This is your fandom. So you know what, but from a layman's perspective, you're like, I have no idea why the music got real dramatic here. It just seems like they're just looking at each other. Like, yeah. I don't know the canon here, but if I did know, this would make sense. It is a really good show. Despite what where we're at as a culture and in our society, it's a really good show, and I'm happy to be a part of it. So
but you know what?
To hear all this faith based stuff, because I'm like, yeah, I feel like they're doing better. They're doing a little bit better.
At the same time, there is like canon shit. Yeah. Like,
well, you got
like you'll go to a Marvel movie, and if you've never been to any of the other Marvel movies, you may or may not. I think they do a good job. That's probably a bad example, but like. There's canon shit everywhere.
Who knew? Like, if you don't read Marvel comics, you don't know who MODOK is. If you don't watch any of this, you have no concept of it.
Like when I started, I didn't know any of the things. And Guardians of the Galaxy was my favorite freaking thing. And Dean was like, "That is like the C or D movie."
Oh man, that was the one you would find. Like at the gas station comics, where it was just this is one I'm not supposed
to
have
look for that.
In it.
And I was like, well, this is my best favorite one of all of them. Like, well, he'd be like Captain America Civil War. And I'm like, can we watch Guardians again? Like, so I mean, but that is truly like interesting.
I feel like I
would love to see like some more.
Check out The Chosen if you want to see what. Like what Christian faith-based entertainment done right?
I would like to see some Buddhist or Hindi faith-based entertainment. Actually,
if you look at what's his name, who did Life of Pi? I can't think of his name right now. He did the Ang Lee. There's a lot.
Okay.
A lot of his storytelling is based in his.
Goes into the Hulk movie.
You don't need to watch that. There's no reason. I love Eric Bana and I celebrate him, but no need to watch that film.
I hate to cut things off, but we are on a bit of a time crunch, so let's go ahead and wrap things up. So that's the story of Color Dreams and Wisdom Tree. Josh, thank you so much for joining us.
I cannot tell you how filled with Christmas joy I am right now. After knowing this is where this was going, I wish we had another 3 hours because I would just go to town on the amount of memories I have of fucking around with Bible Adventures just for the sheer fact that we could.
You know what? Let's set up another time. Maybe I can set up like a bonus episode and we could
watch a playthrough on
YouTube. We can have one of those breakdown episodes that they have for like,
you guys can play each other
Living
on
Dead. Something like that.
There's a way we could go on eBay and get a copy of Bible Adventures. I would play it on our Nintendo because it works. I bet we could find a way.
We'll figure something out. But I do want to throw out the sources, and then I'll give you a chance to go ahead and let you plug Chad the Bird and all of that stuff. If you give me just a quick second. Sources for this game, a majority of the information came from Matt Casey's video, Why Do Some NES Games Say Starting Machine? we'll leave a link to that episode in the episode description, but we also have Wikipedia and articles for the video game Crash of 1983, Wisdom Tree, which redirects from Color Dreams, and Super 3D Noah's Ark. I may have been able to do like its own like episode about Super 3D Noah's Ark, but I chose not to. So
you can watch a playthrough of it. I sent it to you. If anyone wants to see it, it exists.
Jesus.
Literally.
Anyway, so that being said, again, Josh, thank you so much for being on this episode. Is there anything that you'd like to plug before
we
head
now
off?
I feel like I need to plug The Chosen. Like, I mean, I don't normally know if I can because I know there's
do it.
There's a lot of people like, cause I mean, again, you know,
we have
I
7 listeners.
if you haven't heard about it, it's I hate to say it like that, but it is, it's like a global phenomenon kind of thing. Like it's a major show. And I think to its testament that's a good indicator of how good
what
it
you
is
did there.
That like it, you know, it had 2 Fathom events that, you know, was like the third biggest box office thing right now, was the finale for season 3.
Is that where you've got the hair and the beard right now?
Yeah, yeah, because we're going in for season four, and I play a minor character, but I've been in two seasons.
Yeah, you look totally biblical. It's nice.
It is nice, though, to be on a show about Jesus where they treat Jesus as a Jewish person, which I was really appreciative of. Mm-hmm. They call him Rabbi. He's not white. Most of the cast is not. I'm the whitest guy in the cast, and it is...
It's nice that they have Jewish dudes doing it, too.
Yeah, I felt, and a lot of us are, and I thought that was cool. It's a Jewish take on the story of Jesus. I mean, I have something to say about that, but anyway, check it out if you can. It's free on their app. You can watch it on Paramount Plus, you can watch it on Netflix, you can watch it on Amazon Prime. You'll catch me at the end of season two and the beginning of season three, and from what I've heard, season four, but I haven't gotten the script yet. But it is quite something. The season finale of season three was gorgeous. Like they just do a really good job humanizing this story.
Where can people find this?
Netflix, Paramount Plus, the app, the Chosen app, which you can get for free. It's also on Amazon Prime. It's also on Peacock, I believe. Don't quote me on that. I know it's on Netflix, though. At least the first two seasons are. If you just Google The Chosen, you'll find it. It's not hard to find. But it is very good, and it's also something you can watch with your like extremely religious parents if you need something to like kill time during this season. Like, that's a good one to watch.
You need something to like equalize during Thanksgiving and Christmas.
Exactly. So. If you've got very deeply religious parents and you're not really entirely sure how to chill with them, this is a good way to do it.
Awesome.
And if you're not that religious and you want something, you know, a little less intense, check out Chad the Bird. He's the exact opposite.
I'll leave links in the episode description. Meredith, do you have anything that you would like to plug? He said knowingly.
I will also say that there are hotlines going to be posted as well for anyone who has experienced any of the abuse that we kind of like just touched on early in the episode, because that is important. And you're not alone, and you know, feel free to reach out.
I'll make sure that's in there.
It's important. But yes, I do have a book coming out in September, and it is called Ghost Tamer. And I'm really excited. It's my debut. And if you're on Goodreads, like the links are up now, y'all. The cover hasn't been released, but the links are up. So it is on Goodreads, and it's on Amazon. You can pre-order it. You can't like review it or anything yet on Amazon, but it's also on Barnes & Noble and Parnassus, and Nashville even has a pre-sale link where you can get signed and personalized copies. So if you want me to sign it and personalize it, you just write it in the comments and I will sign it and I will personalize it to you.
That's awesome. All right.
Well, go ahead and wrap things up then. Josh, thank you so much for being a part of this. We'll go ahead and close things up. This is Opening Stage VGH, the video game history podcast for everyone. Thank you so much for listening. Have a good one.
Peace.
Bye.